Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. You can catch Dr. Richard Holm with On Call with the Prairie Doc on Thursday nights on SDPB-TV. You can also find him online and here on Thursdays to talk about a topic of the week. Dr. Holm, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Lori.
We're going to get to the
heart. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, we're going to get to the heart of things today, right? And talk some heart health.
Yeah, so heart disease, you know. What do you think of when someone says heart disease? What is your immediate thought of?
That you're going to tell me to exercise. I go right to prevention, but I guess I don't know much about what different kinds of heart disease there are.
Well, you know, you think about it, congenital heart disease. Kids are born with transposition of the vessels and holes in the heart and valves that are switched around. There's all sorts of congenital things that used to kill kids, for sure. And now it still will kill children that are born with these weird things. But oftentimes we have surgical things that we can do to change things for congenital heart disease. Now, that's one kind of heart disease. Another would be, you know, the coronary disease that people have. The arteries that feed the heart are the coronary arteries. And, you know, they fill during diastole, where all the rest of the arteries fill during systole. Do you understand what I just said?
No, sir.
So
go ahead and elaborate a little bit so we're all on the same page.
when the heart squeezes,
okay,
that's systole. It's that top number. It pushes the blood pressure to 120 millimeters of mercury, and the pressure goes up, and it pushes it out through all of the body and all of the arteries of the body. Everybody gets a supply of oxygen and nutrition during that systolic squeeze of the heart. But the heart muscle itself, so what happens is the heart muscle is squeezing. That's not a time for it to get fed. It's doing the work, right? So it relaxes. That's diastole. And so all of the elastic arteries of the body elastically push back. The blood flow stops and then turns backwards because of the elasticity, but the aortic valve slams shut because there's the backflow. It allows blood flow forward only, not backwards, right? So the aortic valve slams shut, the blood flow is starting to run backwards, and the coronary arteries, which are on the other side of the aortic valve, on the side of the arteries, not on the side of the heart, but on the side of the arteries, are open. And the squeeze that pushes blood flow through the coronary arteries while the muscle is relaxing is the elasticity of all of the body's arteries. And suddenly, during diastole, all of the coronary arteries are filling. I mean, it boggles the mind to think about the design of such a thing. Can you imagine that? If you're not a religious person, just knowing the physiology of the heart makes a person become very spiritual, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
The coronary arteries can block as you get older, atherosclerosis or arterial sclerosis, and it will block the blood flow to the artery muscle itself. And if that happens, then a person will have a sudden event, a heart attack. Yeah. And commonly what we do is we see people having chest pain when they exert themselves. It gets better at rest. And they go, that's a sign of coronary artery disease. You get a stress test that tells you whether you should have an angiogram or not. You get an angiogram where they inject dye into the coronary artery, see if there's an obstruction. If there is, they either bypass it or they put in stents, which is, you know, and open it up. So those are the magical things about coronary arteries that we're doing today.
Wow. There's a lot there. Yeah, and there's more.
There's other heart disease. You know, there's valvular heart disease, where a person who may have had rheumatic heart disease, where they had a strep infection that triggered your immune system to attack your own heart valves. I mean, that's what happens. A strep infection. The reason we treat strep, which is really a self-limited sore throat, it would go away anyway. But the reason we're treating it is to prevent the rheumatologic, the immune system-induced destruction of the valves of the heart, mostly the mitral valve. And so, the rheumatic heart disease comes in, the valve is dis- is becomes scarred and misformed, and then the valve leaks, and then the heart eventually gets very weak because it's been leaking and it's not functioning. You know, every squeeze mm-hmm. you make, it doesn't go out the right way. It goes backwards a bit, and you end up having to dilate and get weakened by it. So that's valvular disease, and they've done wonderful things about fixing valves. They can do surgery, opening the heart. They can bypass the heart with a heart-lung machine and oxygenate the blood and pump the blood to all the body, where they freeze the heart muscle itself, and since it's being bypassed, you can cut on it and it doesn't bleed. And it used to be that you couldn't cut on it. I mean, until Lily High from the University of Minnesota developed the heart-lung bypass and allowed the flow of blood around the heart, let the heart be cooled down, and you can do surgery on it and spend, you know, otherwise you had to do it in 5 or 6 minutes or the heart would die.
Wow, that is remarkable. So
when we talk
about heart health, are we largely talking prevention and the same things that we're always talking about, or is there medication, you know, high blood pressure? Those standards have been, you know, in the news a lot lately, whether we should consider, you know, that more people in America have high blood pressure. What are your thoughts there?
Well, here's the thing that will really help your heart more than any pill. Here they are. Number one, walk a mile a day, or 3 miles if you can. Number two, you know, have a friend or have a connection or a number of friends, or develop a relationship and your spiritual connection and all those communicative, loving, caring things about every day helps you get past the stress of it all. And number three, the best diet is less food. And if you look at how do you quantify that, it's calories. And of course, we can talk about all of the nuances of, you know, polyunsaturated and saturated fats and carbohydrates and so on and so forth. And those are probably important. But I would say the most important, you know, I like the idea of eating more fish. I like the idea of eating more less processed foods and more unprocessed, you know, foods, you know, ground flax and so on and so forth. But I think the real key is that we've shown longevity has been proven to be increased by eating less. I'm not talking obesity, because many obese people eat less than thin people. We don't know why that works. And once you're obese, it's really hard to lose it. Just love yourself as you are, but eat less. Exercise, eat less, love yourself, have friends. That's the preventive things. And all the statins in the world, all of the lipid-lowering drugs hold a candle, not even close to the value of those important preventatives. Controlling the blood pressure is way out of whack, of course. Then you need a pill sometimes. But if you're eating less and you're exercising regularly, usually, commonly, that blood pressure will come down.
Mm. How about those tests where you go into one of the hospitals and you pay your $50 and you get a full heart screening?
Yeah.
Is that something that people should do or consider, or certain people should do and others should not bother with?
You can't blame cardiac doctors and hospitals to encourage that kind of thing, because the other ones are, and if you aren't, then the other ones are going to capture your patients. So, I mean, everybody's competing in the same world. But the truth is, the calcium indexing, you know, looking at how much calcium is in those arteries, has very little to do with whether you're going to have a heart attack or not. It has a little. And, you know, echo testing for your carotids is probably, if you're not symptomatic and having stroke-like or TIA-like symptoms, is probably a waste of time. And the aortic ultrasound is something that you should do if you've ever smoked, starting at 60. Once or twice, but because aortic aneurysms can sneak up on you, and if you're a smoker or you've been a smoker, that's a risk factor, particularly if you're a male between 60 and 75.
Right.
But I think for the most part, all those screening things are relatively unimportant, and the most important thing is to not ignore the symptoms that your body's telling you. And if you're regularly exercising and it doesn't bother you, that's the best screening there is. If you're starting to get some pressure in your chest or you can't do it like you were, go to your doctor.
Yeah. All right. Dr. Richard Holm, on call with the Prairie Doc tonight on South Dakota Public Broadcasting Television. Thanks so much for your time.
You're very welcome, Lori. Thank you.